organs of action are inert. They are incapable of movement by themselves. And he knows that there is something else. He thinks that there's, if they are inert, there must be something else which is directing, as though by the will of somebody else, the senses and the organs of action are being directed to act or to listen or to hear or to see. And so he has asked the question, he says, is there something like this? Is there some entity? Then if there is, which he of course knows that there is, that's why he's asking, is it finite or infinite? Is it dependent or independent? If it is dependent, is it sentient or inert? And whatever it is, what is my relationship with that entity? So the guru has answered, saying that there is a subject which is behind the ears, the eyes, all the organs of perception, all the organs of action, as well as the mind, which tells us that if the guru is saying that there is a sub, because he said there was a ear behind the ear, eye, that's the mystic language of the Upanishads. But what he means is that there is a subject, and if there is a subject behind the mind, so forget the senses, because behind the senses is the mind, and that's what we think, is that, okay, the senses don't know, but the mind is the one that knows. But now the guru is saying there's something behind the mind. Obviously, it must be different from the mind. So if the mind is inert, it has to be sentient. If the mind is finite, it has to be infinite. So it's something different from the mind, and that subject is there. And then he goes on to elaborate in the first chapter that what you see, or the ability to see, or the ability to hear, or what you hear, or what you speak, or the ability to speech, that subject is not that. It is because of which you can speak. It is because of which you can hear. It is because of which you can move your hands and legs. And, you know, it is because of which the mind can think. It is not the mind, but it is because of which the mind can think. And the student was thinking that God is what I worship. So that was also explained that no, Brahman is not, God is not what you worship outside. It is not in the idol. And I explained to you that the idea is that not that the guru is asking us not to worship, but when we start thinking that the idol is the only thing and there's nothing else beyond that idol, that is incorrect. Or if it is only Krishna or only Rama or only Vishnu, only Shiva, and there's nothing else, that is wrong. So everybody has an Ishta Devata, favorite Devata, and that's fine. But do not underestimate the other gods. Do not say that, oh, they're nothing. Krishna is the most superior because he's my favorite. That is wrong. So that is what the guru explained in chapter one. And actually, the teaching is over. This is the beauty of the Upanishads. It is not like a Prakaran Grantha, a master, a spiritual master who knows that, okay, nothing is going to change in the student. Nothing the student will understand. So now I better elaborate. Shruti is not like that. The students are asked to go and meditate, and maybe one or maybe a few come back and they say that, I know it well. So it could be one student or it could be more. We don't know that. We know one thing in this text, in this Upanishad, that there are many students, because what is going to happen is after chapter two, some of the students are going to leave because they understood it. They realized it. And then we see that in chapter three, there are still some more students left. Probably we are in their category. And so then a simple story will be told. So in chapter two, the disciple says, I know it. And the guru doesn't accept. So why is it we need to know that the guru doesn't accept when the student says, I know it. You told me about the subject and I know it. Okay. So now let us see, you know, suppose if I say, you know, anybody says, I know music well, or I know this computer very well, or I know whatever, an object well. So what is the first thing that will come to your mind is that there is something, could be anything, could be food, could anything, form and color, photo, computer, object, movie, that there is some object which is different from me. Right? Because I know it well. So there is an I, and then there is this object, which I'm saying I know it very well. So the first thing that will come to your mind is there is some object which is different from her, and that's what she's saying, I know it well. If I say, I don't know it, then also the same thought will come. There is some object. Okay, she doesn't know me. I say, I don't know anything about music. I don't know anything about dance. So, okay, there is this dance and music. That is also an object. Those are also objects. And she doesn't know it. So there is something other than her, other than Jaya, which Jaya either knows or Jaya doesn't know. But there is something else. So when the student says, I know it well, the guru understands that he has made some sort of a form of God. Okay, it's either a form, it's either a sound. And there are many people who meditate and they've come to Gurudev and they say, oh, I saw this bright light. I heard these ringing bells and I heard that. And this is what happened. And I had this fragrance. They say, I smell some nice fragrance. And they think that is God. And this is what is happening here. So when he says, I know it well, he has objectified the subject. Because the guru had told him that it is the subject because of which you know, and you need to recognize the subject. Let me give you an example. So this happened to me. That's why I can give you this example, or we can tell it in any other way. But I was studying in Sandipani and I was having my lunch in the Anakshetra, and one gentleman came to me, and the gentleman is Vivekji's father, by the way. I think all of you know Acharya Vivekji. I didn't know at that point. Just a man approached me and he said to me, do you know who Jaya is? He actually said it to me. Now think about it. Now when he's asking me, do you know who Jaya is? Can I say, yes, yes, I know her very well. Can I say that? He's asking me, do you know who Jaya is? I cannot say I know her very well. Can I say, no, I don't know her very well. I cannot say that. Right? What was my answer that time? And what will it always be? If somebody asks me, do you know Jaya? I'm going to say, no, it is me myself. When I'm asked, suppose if you had asked, who is Asha or who is Nisha or something, or who is Swami so-and-so, or who is this person that I, then there can be four different types of answers. There can be, yeah, I know Asha. I know her very well. Or I could have said, no, I don't know her very well. She stays in the hostel or she's in this room, but I'm really not sure. Or I can say, I don't know her at all. I don't know who she is, right? Or I can say, little bit I know, little bit I don't know. Because when we are talking about somebody else, I can either know that person or that object. I can know it very well, not know it at all, know it a little, know it more. I can say, yeah, I know, yeah, this, right? But when it comes to me, myself, I cannot use any of these four answers because I cannot say that I know. If I say, of course, the thought will come to your mind is, of course, I know myself very well. But when you say I know myself, it is you're talking of your attributes. You can say that I know myself, that I can sing very well. I can dance very well. I know physics very well. That way you know yourself. I know very well that where I live, what kind of a car I drive. I'm a good driver. I know that I'm a good driver. I know that I'm a good cook. I know that I'm a bad cook. I know that I cannot cook. When we say, I know myself, then you're talking only of the attributes. And all those belong to the body and the mind. I know I'm a very happy person. I know I'm a very compassionate person. I know I'm a very intelligent person. I know I'm not a very intelligent person. I have intelligence when it comes to this subjects. I have no intelligence when it comes to those subjects. All I'm describing are the attributes of my body, mind, and intellect. If I say I know myself, because truly here knowledge is being, becoming. And when you become that, you really cannot say, I know myself. That's why the guru has said that we cannot show it to you. We cannot tell you anything further. We have heard this from our teachers. And that is what Gurudev meant when he said, I'm not a mule guru. I can only point the way. That is what the guru has done in this book also. He has pointed the way. He says that look for that subject because of which you can do all these things. In the seat of meditation, that too. Not roaming around outside, because it is not outside, it is within. So this pointer has been given, and in meditation, probably the student has seen a light, seen a form. Guru knows, because when he says, I know it well, he's not talking about Brahman. He cannot be talking about Brahman. That's what I'm saying. If I say I know myself very well, because all of you will say, of course we know ourselves very well, but you know yourselves as a good mother, good worker, good cook, good driver, bad driver, emotional, happy, sad, whatever. So all you're describing are your attributes, and you know very well that you can't cook. You know very well that you can cook. You know very well that you can drive. You know very well that you can speak English and not speak German. All those things you know very well about yourself. But knowing the subject, if you really come to realize the subject, the answer will be, it can never be known, because it can never be known as an object. And therefore, when the student here says, Yadi manyase suvedeti, he says, I know it very well. Suvedeti. Su is to know very well. Then the guru says that something needs to be ascertained more. You need to ascertain it more. Okay. So this is what is saying. There is no other Brahman other than us, other than me. And the other point also to note is that there is not a separate Brahman in me and a separate Brahman in you and a separate Brahman in her. So it is that one universal consciousness that has to be recognized. And even though it is universal, we cannot go into the universe to recognize it. We need to recognize it within ourselves. And when we recognize it within ourselves, immediately at the same time, we will come to recognize it in the entire universe, in all the beings, in all the plants and animals and everybody. There is a story of Shukdev. Shukdev is the son of Bhagwan Vedvyas. And it is said that Shukdev, he actually didn't want to come out of the mother's womb. So he stayed in the womb for 18 months. And the mother was getting very, very uncomfortable. So Bhagwan Vedvyas then prayed to him that, oh, you know, baby, please come out. Oh, son, please come out now, because mother is getting very uncomfortable. So Shukdev is said to be a very, very evolved soul from previous births. So he said, I don't want to come out, father, because if I come out, Maya will grab me. That's what happens. They say that the fetus remembers all the previous births, but the minute the fetus is born, the baby is born, it forgets, because Maya engulfs the baby. So he says, when I come out, Maya will engulf me. So unless you bless me that Maya will not do so, I will not come out. So Bhagwan Vedvyas blesses him that no, Maya will have no effect on you. You come. So he comes, but when he comes, he's totally dispassionate because he knows his real self. So he just starts walking into the forest. And father gets very upset because just born son, now he's walking. So the father starts running after him. Bhagwan Vedvyas is running after him. And he says, oh son, please come back. Please come back. Then it is said that the trees in the forest replied the father. The trees replied. Shukdev Maharaj never said anything. The trees, and that is that oneness, that identification which comes in, the, which has to be achieved. And the way to achieve it is by knowing the subject, by knowing the subject within yourself. So then you become one with everything. So you're one with the total mind, and this is what happens. So a person who is realized will never say, I know it. And we'll never say that it can be known. Because when it's said that it can be known, then only object, whatever is known is inert. I've told you, yadrisham tadjadam. So anything that is known in the form of color, form, sound, taste, touch, all the five senses is inert. So when he says it, I know it, that means he has come to know something inert. And people, it happens to people in the seat of meditation, they see light, they smell fragrance, they taste something in their mouth, the taste comes, whatever it happens. So no, that is not what it is. So what the guru does then is tells him that we need to ascertain. Means what? Means go back and meditate. So the student is sent back. Either one or more, we don't know. But the student is then sent back. Okay. any questions at this point? This is the little bit of a high chapter, and then it'll get very easy because then there is a story. Any questions at this point? Everybody's okay with this? All right. So verse 2. Naham manne suvedeti no na vedeti vedacha yonas tadveda tadveda no na vedeti vedacha. Now the student has gone, meditated more and come back. Okay, so now he's saying, now the same student which said, I know it very well, says, I do not think that I know it well. Now he's changed his answer. First he said, I know it very well. Now he says, I don't think I know it very well. But not that I do not know either. I cannot say I don't know it. I know too. Who amongst us comprehends it both as the not known and as the known, he comprehends it. Okay? So, na aham manne suvedeti. I don't think that I know it. Fine. At the same time, I cannot say that I don't know it. Let's go back to our example. When the gentleman asked me if I'm Jaya, can I say I know her very well? I can't. Can I say that I don't know her? I can't. Okay? So when I come, knowledge here, see the way we understand the word knowledge is, we understand the word knowledge as knowledge of. I have knowledge of the computer, of the printer, of the house, of the driving, of the cooking, of, knowledge of. But this knowledge, knowing the subject, is not a knowledge of, it is just being it. It's just being it. Knowledge is being here. It is not knowledge in the sense that we are used to. We are only used to knowledge through the eyes, through the nose, through the our ears, tongue, skin. These are the methods of knowledge that we know, and the knowledge happens in the form of thought in our mind. And we think that we are the thought. That's what I say. I'm very angry today. I'm very happy today. I'm very sad today. Because now what I have done is that thought, the thought is happy, sad, or whatever, and I have taken that thought upon myself. I have superimposed it upon myself. And I take on the attribute of the thought, which is the thought is happy, sad, etc., etc. But I go on saying I'm happy, sad, etc., etc. The body is fat or thin. I go on saying I'm fat or thin. The body is getting old. I say I am thin. I am getting old. I am this. I am that. So everything I'm taking on myself. And that is the only way we know. That's the way we've been. So therefore, this realization of the subject, knowing the subject as the subject, as the ultimate seer and not as the object, it cannot be objectified. And therefore, we can never say that I know it very well. We can never say that. Because the minute I say I know it, there is an I and there is an it. And then I have objectified it. There is an object. So it cannot be said. Okay, then I don't know it. Don't I know myself? How can I say that I don't know myself? I cannot say. Therefore, Guru already said in the first chapter, it is that which is beyond the known and the unknown. And the implication of that beyond the known and unknown is that which cannot be taken on or given up. So I told you, if it is something other than me, if it is a thought, if it is an angry thought, I can take it on and become angry, or I can give it up. Anything which is other than me, I can take it on, give it up. Take it on, give it up. But which is me myself can neither be taken on, neither heya nor upadeya. You have to understand it as your own self. And therefore he says, but I cannot say that I don't know. I cannot say that. And I cannot either say that I know it very well. Very well, or I just even know it. Because then I know that I'm objectifying it, which means that he has realized it within himself. So therefore, now he comes to the conclusion that no, I don't know it as an object. It is not an object. It is the subject. It is me, myself. So this knowledge is not a knowledge of. It is just being it, just being. just that is what he has, he's saying. Because here, when you see, there are like two contradictory statements, because at one point he's saying, I know it. I'm not saying that I know it, he says. I'm not saying that I know it. And on the other side, he's saying, but I can't say I don't know it either. So it appears like two contradictory statements, right? Either you know it or you don't know it. But he's saying, no, I don't think that I really know it. But I can't say that I don't know it either. So what it is from one angle, as an object, I don't think I know it. That is the point. That as an object, if I objectify this, then I don't think I know it, because it cannot be known as an object. And as a subject, I really cannot say that I don't know it. As the being the subject itself, how can I say that I don't know myself? All right. Think about it. Put yourself in the, suppose somebody approaches you and asks you, who is your name, Padmaja, or who is, Yasmina or Sudha, right? What do you want to say? I know, I don't know. It's me. Therefore, these two contradictions.
Can I ask a question, Jayaji?
Yeah.
Why is the student not telling, I am it?
Because the one who realizes, he's not saying that. Shruti is not saying that.
Okay.
Even when he says, I am it, there is an I and there is a it. So even a realized master will never say, I am it. Because what is happening is, what is only remaining is the I, the big I. So I am it also cannot be said. Then again, it is objectifying it.
So I am.
I am. I. Not even I am, ultimately I. Because it's like saying, that's what I said. I say, I am angry. It is like, if I say, I am it, or the student says, I am it, it is exactly like saying, I am angry. Because it is the object. I am angry, I am happy, I am fat, I am thin, I am intelligent, I am dull. It is exactly like that. Therefore, that I am it cannot be said. Then it, he has objectified it. The one who really becomes Brahman will never have any arrogance, any ego. That's what I say, my dog, so beautiful. I am very intelligent. That ego is. So if he says, I am it, then the I is, that's the small I saying it. Because the big I, understand, it's Advaita. There is nothing to say. So he will never, the really realized master never says, I am it. Never says, I have realized. They don't even say that. They never say, I have realized. They just say, Brahman is. That's why. Okay? Because there's no difference. That's what we think. We think that if I say I am Brahman, then that's different from saying I'm angry. There's no difference. It's exactly, I'm angry, I'm happy. It's exactly the same. There is a subject and there is an object. The subject-object dichotomy is still there. Okay?
Can I ask you a question, Jayadi?
Yeah.
No, when you say, I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is it different from, identifying as I am this or I am that? But so, you're not insentient, you're living, whatever. That I know thing.
Where the student is saying?
When you tell yourself, for example, you said your name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you cannot say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you cannot say,
I know who she is. Who is Jaya? Yeah. How can you say, because if I say I know who she is, then there is I and there is a different she.
Right.
If there is a different name, I can say.
Yeah.
Who is Asha? I can say I know who she is or who she is not.
Yes. So now when you say, I know, I mean, you're thinking, I know, because you can't say, I don't know, right? That means, you know, I know, right? So at that time,
yeah. Brahman? Are you talking about Brahman?
No, about ourselves.
Uh-huh. Like,
you can't say, I don't know, right? Because you do know something that you know.
Correct. Correct. But that's what I told you. When I say I know, I'm talking either about my body, my mind, or my intellect.
Mm.
I'm talking about matter.
Right.
When we talk about attributes, it is always about matter, and matter is always inert.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are no attributes in Brahman. That's why you cannot talk about Brahman at all. So the minute I say I know I'm tall, I know I'm short, I know I'm fat, I know I'm thin, I know I'm happy, I know I'm sad, it's all matter that you're describing. I'm the mother of two kids, I'm a female, I'm a, you know, president, I'm acharya, I'm this, I'm that, I'm employer, I'm employee. Everything is being talked about matter.
Yeah, but when I'm not insentient, like I am existing, right? At that point, is it again the ego?
Yes, absolutely.
Existing.
Yes.
Mm. So it kind of overlaps.
Yeah. See, I'll tell you why this question comes, is because when we say the word ego, we relate it to pride.
That's right.
So now you must be thinking that if I say I'm the mother, what is pride in that? It is a fact, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're thinking?
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking it is pride, right? Suppose somebody asks me, how many children? Now I say I have two children. Now is that like, oh, I'm proud I've got two children, or is it fact? And you think that that is not ego, because it is not out of pride that I'm saying it, right? But Vedantic definition of ego is what? Ego is identification with one thing or the other.
Mm.
So when I say I am a mother, I have identified myself with my body. And therefore, it is coming from ego. Because don't think of ego as pride. It's very common.
Mm-hmm.
When we use the word ego, we think pride. So if I tell you that I've got a big house, huh? Now you think, that is ego. Now, no. Because that could also be a statement of fact. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita also I explained. Bhagavan says, I'm the one that is creating. But it is not out of ego. There, it's a statement of fact, because he's talking from the highest standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bhagavan talking, right? That's why even Bhagavad Gita, I told you, don't think that this is from the standpoint of ego. For us, it is ego, not in the sense of pride, because of identification.
Mm.
So that's why it becomes very tricky. That's why this ego word has to be understood very clearly as per Vedantic definition.
Right.
Not as in common parlance, we think, oh, she's got such a big fat ego. She thinks she's very beautiful. She thinks she's very rich. She thinks this is what we would say. But that doesn't apply for Vedanta. Vedanta says identification is ego. Okay. Ahamkara. Aham karoti iti ahamkara. Aham karoti. So I do, right? So if I have to do something, I have to identify with the body, mind, intellect. Now that I'm speaking, I am identifying with my body. I am identifying with my vocal cords, right? So I have to invoke ego. In Karma Yoga also, I told you, if any action has to be performed, ego has to be invoked. You cannot do action without ego. Because you can, if I'm moving my hand, if I'm speaking, if I'm opening my mouth, I have to identify with my body. Right? So action cannot be done without ego. And that's why the principle of Karma Yoga is to surrender that ego to a higher altar. So ego is required. In the transactional world, ego is required. Because no action can be performed without ego. Why? Because if the ego is removed, Brahman is the non-doer. Brahman doesn't have eyes, ears, legs, nothing. Brahman needs an upadhi. Right? So identification with upadhi, identification with matter envelopments is required for performing action. and their ego is required. And so that the ego doesn't become too strong, we surrender it all the time. In Sunday's class only, I was telling, you know, because we're doing this fundraiser of calendar, I said, oh, this calendar got sold. I said, thank you, Gurudev. Right? And one of the students said, what is there to thank Gurudev? She's very new. She's very new to Vedanta, right? And she says, why should you thank Gurudev? You got the call and you did. But the yes, I did it. And I did it. I had to invoke my ego to tell that lady, I will come to your house. How can I drive without identifying with my body? So I have to drive. I have to pick up the calendar. I have to pick up the money. Everything is. But so that my ego doesn't bloat up, I say thank you. I shift it. That is because of Gurudev that she got the thought to call me. And that is what I'm doing, is working on myself. Okay? That is what needs to be done. Here, in Upanishad, that is the thing of Shruti. She doesn't tell us all this.
But he says, go meditate. That should be a wonderful
solution. Yeah, and meditate means, what is she presuming? That you have already done karma yoga and purified your mind to such an extent that you are capable of meditating. That's why we say that Upanishad is very, very high. The student also is extremely highly. That's why I told you in the first lecture itself, do not compare. We are not at the level of this student. We are at the level of Arjuna. Agree. But look at the instruction that is being given to Arjun and look at the instruction that is being given here. That is the reason.
Thank you.
All right. And the three things that we can know this subject, we have already discussed this, but once again, Shruti, Yukti, and Anubhuti. Okay. So Shruti already said in the first chapter that it is the subject behind all the senses, mind, etc. So that is Shruti Vakya, which can never be negated, which can never be falsified. Then the Yukti is that I know that I am existing. I know that, right? And I am functioning. So there has got to be some. That's why the student has already asked. But I know that I'm functioning. And also, it cannot be known as an object. This subject, which the guru is telling me about, can never be known as an object. And then my own experience is that I am a sentient being. And I also am aware of my being sentient. Okay, so there is existence as well as consciousness. Both are the same. All right. Okay, so we'll go to next verse. Yasya matam tasya matam matam yasya na vedasaha avidnyatam vijanatam vidnyatam avijanatam. He understands. This is Shruti commenting on verse 2. Shruti is now commenting. It's a comment by Shruti. It's a comment. He understands, Shruti says. He understands it, and know that the I is in capital. So when the it now is referring to Brahman, who comprehends it not. And he understands it, not who feels he has comprehended it. It is the unknown to the master of true knowledge, but to the ignorant, it is the known. Okay, see how, like, it's very confusing. Okay. So he understands who comprehends it not means the one who does not comprehend it as an object understands it. That's the main thing here. Because the most common mistake that a person makes is, and we do not mistake, you know, when we have started studying Vedanta also, we always, first of all, we thought God was out there only, right? We'll light a lamp, we'll go to the temple, God is there, I am here kind of thing. That's how we grew up. And when we came into this Vedanta, when we started hearing, we actually hear it as an object. That's some Brahman is there and Guru is talking about some Brahman somewhere. So if you keep on with that dichotomy that I'm here and Brahman is there, then Shruti says, then you have not understood it. Okay. Though in the beginning stages, we do need that. Please understand, we need that. In this case, the student has done all that bhakti and upasana, karma, all that he has done. This is what is to be presumed. Therefore, he is ready to, for the seat of meditation. So when she says he understands it, who comprehends it not, who comprehends it not as an object. Okay? And he understands it not who feels he has comprehended it. If I feel, then what am I doing again? Again, I'm doing the same thing. I know it. I feel it. It's objectified. Right? Anytime we bring in these words like feel, taste, touch, smell, object. It's referring to an object. So therefore, it's Shruti is saying, this is a comment by Shruti. So Shruti says that, no, if you think that you feel Brahman, if you taste Brahman, if you saw the form of Brahman, if you heard bells ringing and that is Brahman, then no, that is not correct either. It is the unknown to the master of true knowledge. But to the ignorant it is known. So there are two categories now here. The master of true knowledge means the realized person. Okay. It remains unknown. Let's take the ignorant one. It is known as an object. It is like the snake, our snake and rope example. So at one stage you walk in and you see the snake, but the realized master sees only the rope. And the seeker, the ignorant person, will only see the snake. So it will be a known thing to him, knows the snake. The seeker, who is in between, will go in and he will falsify the snake. He will think that I do see the snake, but I know that it is not a snake, it is a rope. And the realized master will go in, the one who is going in, who knows, really knows it, will say it is a rope. Okay? So there is a person who is completely ignorant and there is someone who is misunderstood. There are two categories again in the ones who are not realized. One has misunderstood it as a snake, and one has not seen the rope or the snake or nothing. Totally doesn't know anything. Okay? So the ignorant, he thinks he knows it, but he doesn't really know it. And avidnyatam vijana, those who are established in Brahman, for them Brahman remains unknown. Because why it remains unknown? Because they will always say that it can never be known. That is the meaning of that. It is unknown to the master of true knowledge. Means not that he doesn't know who he is, but when he is talking to other people, he is going to say it is not a thing to be known. Do you get this? We'll go over it again, just even for my own sake. He understands it who comprehends it not. Who comprehends, you have to add words in there. Who comprehends it not as an object. Okay? So if he doesn't think of Brahman as an object, then Shruti says, then I can say that he has understood it. Because if he says that I comprehend it, I know it very well, then he doesn't know, because he has objectified Brahman either as a form, a taste, a touch, a smell, or a sound. And then that he doesn't know. Now, a realized master will always say it is unknown. And this we are talking about realized master. Why? Because when he is explaining to his students, he can never say, if he says that it can be known, then like I told you, if I say that I know something, the thought in your mind is going to be, there is something other than her which she knows. So if the realized master says that you can know it, the student is going to think it is something which is not me, which is other than me. And therefore the realized master will never say that it is known. When he says it is unknown to the master, means he will not say that this is known. This can be known. Because when you say it is unknown, that means there is something unknown. Or if you say if this is known, then is there something which is unknown? It is beyond known and unknown. Please understand. Getting a bit too complicated. Understand it this way. Basically, just understand it. The simple way of understanding it is that when I say anything that I know it, it is objectifying. Any kind of object I can know. That is the only kind of knowledge that actually I have been exposed to. I have studied subjects, I've gone to university, I've studied driving, cooking, arts, music, dance, everything. And therefore, I have always had a knowledge of objects. And therefore, I say, I know this, I know that. But when it comes to Brahman, which is the subject, which is knowing the subject, knowledge here is only becoming. It is being, it is me, myself. That is the realization that has to come. And when that realization comes, I can never say to somebody else that you can know it. It is unknown. It will remain unknown as an object. If you go on searching for it for ages, births and births, if you go on searching for God outside as an object, you will never find it. It will always remain unknown to you. Okay, so the only way of knowing God is becoming it. And the only way of becoming it, now next verse Shruti will explain, how do I become that? The only way of becoming it is to realize the subject in the seat of meditation. And how do I do, what do I do in the seat of meditation is now Shruti will tell in the next verse. Okay, all right. It'll be easier if you do it as a subject-object dichotomy. Then it'll be easy. So you have to, that's why when you say I know it, then there is two things. There is the I and there is the it. Therefore, the realized master also never says I know it. Therefore, the student never said I know it. Because the one who has realized, he knows that, no, I don't know it, I am it. There's a difference. I know it and I am it, there's a difference. You understand that? That's why when somebody asks me, do you know Jaya? The answer is, it cannot be I know Jaya, I am Jaya. Okay? All right? Any questions? Now, at this stage, what happens? See, even here, Gurudev has said, kill the ego. So that's why somebody came and told me, because this lady goes for Vipassana meditation, right? And Vipassana is where you reach the Shunya. It's the Shunyavadin Buddhists that do that. And they reach a Shunya. In Vedantic meditation, Vedanta doesn't encourage reaching Shunya. One thing is, why go through so much hassle to reach a void? Why are you taking so much trouble to reach a void, to reach nothing? But then the lady said to me that, oh, you don't know, it's the experience that I like, right? Now what she's doing is, she's maintaining the I like that experience and therefore I go there. So the I is maintained, and Vedantic meditation, that is the main thing, is to kill the ego. That's what Gurudev has said there. Kill the ego. So when you kill the ego, there is no I to like the experience. That is the goal of Vedantic meditation. The goal of Shunyavadin is I should reach the void. So the I is maintained. The ego is maintained. Right? And it should be reaching a void. Now you're taking so much pains and paying so much money to reach a void, which can be achieved in deep sleep, because in deep sleep you're reaching the void anyways. So that's the important thing there, that ego has to be worked on. the I which identifies with the body, mind, and intellect. Okay, now at this point, some of the students who had realized, who had really, because the, some student or one student came back and said, I think I know it, but I really don't know it, etc. So now Shruti said, okay, those, this is the verse 3 is the comment that Shruti gave. So those who really realized, they left. That is what we presume. But not all the students left. So there were some students. So then the guru says, okay, now I need to guide them in meditation. See how the book is going. First, he just told and he said, go meditate. He didn't give any guidance as to what the meditation should be like. See the book, right? First, I said the student just went, meditated. Then one or few came back, said, I know it well. He said, no, go back again. But he never gave direction in how to meditate or what to meditate on. Now those, so some, this means the high level students left. So even in those students, there was a hierarchy. So the highest students who they knew how to meditate, they realized, they left. There were some students still sitting there in front. So now he, Guru thinks, okay, now it's time for me to guide these people in meditation. So now he's giving guidance in meditation. Okay, so verse 4. Pratibodha viditam matam amrutatvam hi vindate atmana vindate viryam vidyaya vindate mritam. Indeed, he attains immortality who intuits it in and through every modification of the mind. Through the Atman, he obtains real strength and through knowledge, immortality. Okay, now the key word here is the mind. For us, the instruments that we have to realize Brahman are only three: body, mind, intellect. Out of which, body is completely inert and it doesn't even have knowledge. Body has only the existence part. The function of the body is to help us just be in one position, steady, because meditation cannot be done walking, running, no. So the body has to be able to sit in one position, asana. Therefore, Patanjali Yoga Shastra talks about asanas. Very important that the body remains steady. That is the function of the body, and the function of the body is over there. As long as the body can sit in one position, asana siddhi is achieved with 30 minutes of sitting without moving. You know, otherwise we are fidgeting, moving this, that and all. So that is the function. Now what two instruments? Mind and intellect. Out of mind and intellect, only mind. So there is only that one instrument which is now remaining for us to reach Brahman, right? Because through the mind we have gotten all the knowledge so far in our life of outside objects. Now we are trying to recognize an inside, something inside the subject. So what is, I cannot use the computer, I cannot use anything external. It is the subject within me. There is nothing external that I can use except my body. Therefore, the body has to be kept healthy just for that, not for anything else. Body has to be kept healthy so that I am able to sit in a position steady. Because when the body is steady, the chances of the mind being steady are more. The more steady the body is, the more steady will be the mind. Okay? So now the only instrument that remains for me is the mind. Now, what do I do with the mind? Prati bodha viditam. Bodha here is coming from buddha dhatu, the first word, buddha dhatu, to know. But here bodha means thought. And the reason it is interpreted as thought is because one is that all the knowledge happens in my mind through the medium of thought. I told you the technical explanation, Vedantic explanation of how an object is seen. The object physically is not entering my mind. If every object was entering my mind, impossible. So what is entering my mind is only a form, a shape of that object. It is entering my mind, okay? Shape can be in the form of a computer, of a smell. Shape is of also of a smell, of a taste, of a sound. So that shape enveloped by consciousness is entering my mind. And knowledge in my mind happens only in the form of thought. The object is nowhere near the mind. Nowhere. That's why the mind can, I can even sit here and think of the Taj Mahal. The object is nowhere, but I am getting knowledge of the Taj Mahal sitting right here. Okay, so this is how. So therefore, this bodha word is to be interpreted as thought, knowledge. And the other thing is, thought itself is knowledge, and this thought itself is going to, what has been said now earlier in the first chapter, it is because of which that the mind can think. So if we go back to Gurudev's definition, what is the mind? He said it's a flow of thought. Then the next question is, what is thought? Thought equals object plus consciousness. Why? Just now I told you. What is thought? That object is enveloped by consciousness, and then that consciousness is entering through my eyes into my mind, and the form of a computer is coming in the mind, and now the knowledge is happening that this is a computer, or this is a printer, or this is an apple or a banana. Okay, so thought equals, in the womb of every thought is an object, and that object could be a taste, a touch, a smell, form, anything, color, whatever, right? Five. So in the womb of the thought is the object, and the thought, as though it influences the consciousness. So what happens is, I say that I know the computer. Actually, consciousness by itself cannot know anything. Please understand, pure consciousness or Brahman is non-doer, non-enjoyer. Does not have eyes, does not have legs, does not have nose, nothing. So consciousness itself can never see, touch, taste, smell, or hear. But the thought is now in, as though influencing consciousness. And what is now happening is, I am saying, I know the computer. I know the smell. I know the taste. Okay? So thought equals object plus consciousness. Mathematical formula, therefore consciousness equals thought minus object. Mathematics, pure mathematics. All right. Now, I want to reach that consciousness via the thought, right? Because that is the only instrument that I have. I cannot reach it outside. It is not outside. I cannot go anywhere, fly anywhere, nothing. I cannot do that. So what do I do then? I have to make the thought devoid of object. How do I make a thought devoid of object? How do I remove the object? Shift attention from the object to that because of which I can see the object. That because of which I can hear the object. That because of which I can taste. That because of which I can move. Constantly shifting attention. This is what instruction Shruti is giving. See, the instruction also is so high. It's a very subtle and very, very difficult practice to do. Why? Because we don't have dispassion. Okay. When will I stop giving importance to the object? Is when I have vairagya, when I have dispassion. And dispassion is neither like nor dislike. Even if I say I like the object is going to, of course, if I say I like the object is going to be in my thoughts all the time, something that I like. Even if I say I don't like the object, you know, we think more of the things that we really don't like. Whether I say like or whether I say dislike, I have made a connection with that object. It is a positive connection or a negative connection. Nevertheless, it is a connection. That connection to break. If that connection has to break, dispassion has to set in. There is no other way. Shruti is not even telling that. Because these students, even though they are, I told you, even though these few, some higher grade students have left, these students are also at a very high level. But they need a little bit more guidance than the other students. So now Shruti is guiding them that how do you know this, how to know the subject? So Shruti is saying, in the seat of meditation, when you think, now, this is where that day Padmaja had asked a question. So how do I shift attention from the, because you see, we are, our mind is constantly racing. We have so many thoughts, and every thought, there is some object in this room. So what you do is you replace the outside objects with the object Brahman. And I'm saying object because at this point, we have to objectify it. Therefore, I am Brahman thought is false. And it is a dichotomy. It is not Advaita, because I am I. There is I and there is Brahman, and I am it. That's why the student in the ultimate things will not say I am it. But you need that I am it, in the sense the it not being an object but being Brahman. You need that to reach Brahman. You need it. Okay? So this is what is being told here. The how do I recognize that is, now what you do is that you have to separate consciousness from the thought, and thought is object plus consciousness. So separate the thought, you have to take the object out of it. If you take the object out of it, thought becomes consciousness. Thought is nothing but consciousness, by the way, understand that thought, mind is nothing but the substratum. Mind also is the body, also is consciousness only. Mind is nothing but consciousness. But because there is this disturbance of objects, these objects are hitting the mind all the time, the substratum is forgotten. Therefore, in deep sleep, the mind is completely at peace because the mind goes back into its home. It goes to Brahman. It goes to the pure consciousness in deep sleep. And that is the reason that you feel so peaceful in sleep. And when you wake up, you feel happy from deep sleep. Huh? If you've had a dreamful sleep, then you won't be that relaxed. But when you go into a deep, deep sleep and come out of it, you do feel relaxed. You do. The mind feels very, very happy. And the reason is it has gone back to its source. And therefore, mind is nothing but the substratum, except the object is coming in between and poking it. And so the mind cannot feel itself to be the substratum, doesn't know itself to be the substratum. So you take the object out, but to take the object out suddenly is not possible. So you replace it with Brahman. You replace it with the object Brahman. It's okay. In the mind, okay, there's this object called Brahman. Now you replace it. And what will happen in the higher stages of meditation is this I am Brahman is a thought, is a vritti. Huh? This vritti will become a vasana. Okay, now come back a little bit. How is a vasana created? We have seen this many, many times. If I do something just once, is a vasana created? No. So I have to do that same thing over and over and over again, right? Gurudev's famous tea or coffee example. For births and births, or at least from my childhood, I've drunk a cup of tea in the morning. Now it's become a vasana. The minute I wake up, tea comes. Because I've done it. I've done it for so long. Okay. So for I am Brahman thought to become vasana, what should I do? I should keep on chanting, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. Then that thought will become so subtle. When you can hold, that's Savikalpa Samadhi, is when you can hold your mind only in the thought, I am Brahman. Only one thought, that's it. No other thought. Right now, it's so many thoughts are going through. So when you can hold the mind in that I am Brahman thought alone, it at one point will become so subtle, it'll convert itself into a vasana. When it converts into a vasana, only Brahman will remain and I am will be gone. The reason, see, if you're in very, very deep sleep, very fast, say you're asleep, huh? Suddenly somebody wakes you up, even in that, you know, like half asleep, you know, sometimes when the alarm goes off, you're very fast asleep or the phone rings and you just get up. Even when you just suddenly wake up, do you have any doubt that you're a woman or a man? You may even have a doubt, my God, what is ringing? I don't know if the phone is ringing or the alarm is ringing or what is ringing. You may have all other kinds of doubts. Where am I? Am I in my own house? Am I somewhere else? You may have n number of doubts, but you will never have a doubt that you're a woman or a man. Think. And you know why? Because that is a vasana. The thought that I am a woman is a vasana. It is not a thought. Therefore, it is very easy. So no matter where you come out of a coma, you will not forget that you're a woman. You may forget your, you know, who are you? But you will know that you're a man or you're a woman. Because vasana never goes. Thought can go, but vasana never goes anywhere. So this I am Brahman thought, which is very needed. And it's Gurudev's example of the pole vaulter. It is the pole. I don't know how many of you have heard this example, but Gurudev always in his books has given this example. There's the sport, right? The pole vaulter. So the athlete, he runs with the pole in his hand. He plants the pole. He goes up with the pole. And when he's jumping on the other side, he drops the pole here. This I am Brahman is the pole. You need the pole. And at that time, even if you think that I am here and Brahman is there, it's okay. It's okay. So you take that pole of I am Brahman and you keep at it. And when you reach that high stage, you drop the thought. You will drop that. There's nothing to drop. It will drop because it will become a vasana. That is what is jumping onto the other side. Okay. I think I'll stop here today. If there are any questions, we will continue with this verse. There is more to this verse than this. Are there any questions? But I'll promise you that chapter 3 will become very easy.
Jaya, may I ask,
Yes, Meena, I need some more volume. Come closer.
Oh, can you...
Volume, hear? I can't... I know you're speaking, but I can't quite understand. No, you muted yourself, yes, Meena. Okay, come close to the speaker and speak.
Is Om Namah Shivaya, can that also be a pole?
Om Namah Shivaya, for Vedantic meditation, Om Namah Shivaya is a japa. It's a japa. And yeah, before meditation, japa is to train the mind to remain on one thought. Okay, so japa will help in training the mind to remain on one thought, but in the final stage, that thought has to become I am Brahman. But initially, yeah, the Shruti is not even talking about that because this student has done all this. But Om Namah Shivaya is a japa. Okay, Om Namah Shivaya cannot be a vasana, cannot become. It will be a vasana of japa. So what will happen is you will go on saying Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. But to actually realize Aham Brahmasmi is required.
Thank
Aham
you.
Brahmasmi. Yeah. Yeah. Because when you say Shivaya, see, it is again a form. It is a form of Shiva. And you don't want to reach the form. You don't want to get the form. You don't want to even see the form. Because whatever you see is inert. Even if you see the form of... That is what was happening to Ramakrishna Paramahansa. He was talking to the Divine Mother every day. So he was seeing her every single day. He was seeing her, right? And he was talking to her. And finally, the guru came and said, you've got to kill the form. And he said, let me ask Mother. Actually, that's what he said. He said, because he never did anything without asking the Divine Mother. So he told the Guru Totapuri, he said, no, I have to ask my mother if this is what is correct. So he went to the Divine Mother and the mother said, I have sent that Guru. Now you go and you do whatever he tells you. If he's telling you to kill the form, you kill. Because you will not become one with me as long as you keep seeing my form. So if you want to become one, you cannot have a form. But Om Namah Shivaya as a japa will help train the mind. So if you're doing it, do it.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. So we will continue with verse 4 next time because there's more to it. Thank you all for attending and I shall see you next Monday. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.